Coming up on today's show.
I was in Cuba, and we were there for an Olympic qualifier. And I remember I was trying to talk to the locals about where's the local church. It was an hour and a half walk away.
Peace be with you. This is Catholic Sports Radio, located at the intersection of your faith life and sports life, and on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and lots of other platforms. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking with Catholic guests who are current or former athletes, coaches, referees, umpires, clergy, administrators, and more from the pro, amateur, and scholastic ranks about the intersection of their faith life and their sports life. The show website is CatholicSportsRadio.net. At the top of the website, there are links to social media for this show, meaning Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, so that you can engage with me and the show that way. And we are still going strong with the Catholic Sports Radio community, which is the Facebook group consisting of listeners of this show and some past guests. That is free to join, and you can also find a link for that too on CatholicSportsRadio.net. And of course, social media, as well as the website, all give you the opportunity to contact me, as does traditional email, which you can do through Bruce@CatholicSportsRadio.net. Now on to my ministry moment for this episode. I know someone who is currently writing a baseball book about what someone from the Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum called the greatest comeback ever, bar none. And if you're a movie buff, you might be thinking right now of the Bad News Bears. How many times have you seen a coach watch their team go out and just play horrendously, not even stepping in to try to stop the bleeding, knowing that there will be lessons learned and better games ahead as a result of what those players went through in those really difficult downtimes, those grueling losses? And isn't that like what this weekend's first reading told us? This first Sunday of Advent, we heard from the Old Testament, Isaiah 16, which said, quote, "You, Lord, are our Father, our Redeemer, you are named forever. Why do you let us wander, O Lord, from your ways, and harden our hearts so that we fear you not? Return for the sake of your servants, the tribes of your heritage. Oh, that you would rend the heavens and come down, with the mountains quaking before you, while you wrought awesome deeds we could not hope for, such as they had not heard of old. No ear has ever heard, no eye ever seen, any God but you doing such deeds for those who wait for him." Moving on now with this week's episode, my guest has been working in baseball for parts of four decades now, including having been the hitting coach for the Washington Nationals and the Pittsburgh Pirates, as well as the player information coach for the Los Angeles Angels, and the minor league hitting coordinator for the Minnesota Twins. He was also on the coaching staff of the 2008 Olympic Team USA baseball team. Plus, he coached at the collegiate level, including the University of Kentucky, as well as the University of Florida, having played for the Gators during his years as a student athlete. Welcome to Catholic Sports Radio, Rick Eckstein.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you bet, Rick. Thank you so much. I'm looking forward to this. Folks, are you seeing a pattern here? The luster should have fallen off long ago by this point in terms of life seeming to be so easy if you're in pro sports, as evidenced by the many guests you've heard on this show who have a long list of cities that they've moved to as they've continued to change employers. Rick, in your case, we heard a bunch of them in that intro, but where did it all start for you? Where were you born and raised, and what was the family size?
I was born and raised in Sanford, Florida, which is just north of Orlando. And our family size, I'm one of five children. My mother and father had five kids in 6.5 years, so we're very close.
And where are you amongst all of them? Oldest, youngest?
I am number four of five.
And what's the boy-girl breakdown?
So I have two older sisters, and I have one older brother and one younger brother.
Okay, and I believe that you are a cradle Catholic, yes? Tell us about your faith life as a young boy.
Yes, my faith life. We were a very strong Catholic family. My mother and father started their education careers. They were both career educators at All Souls Catholic Church in Sanford, Florida, as teachers and instructors in Sunday school. So I was born and raised, you know, with a very strong faith. And at the very young age of around 7, I started doing the altar boy. I was, you know, obviously baptized in the Catholic Church and got my sacraments, First Holy Communion and confirmation, and spent many years as an altar boy growing up and strengthening my Catholic faith. So that was kind of formative years of strengthening my faith, looking back.
Was that parish where you were an altar boy, was that attached to a Catholic school?
It was, yes. So they, it was, it has since done away with the high school portion of it, but they still have the elementary and middle school portion of it.
So you're saying that when you went, you were able to go all the way up through high school? It was Catholic all the way up until your senior year of high school?
No, so I did not. My parents were, they started their careers teaching there, and they eventually had to move over to the public school. But I stayed, we stayed at All Souls, you know, with all the, you know, sacraments and Sunday school and faith formation. And, but that's where they started their teaching careers. So,
I see.
You know, growing up and, you know, everything about, you know, our faith, you know, praying and relying on the Lord and everything was very strong in our household, and that was, you know, their upbringing, and it started in their you know, professional careers.
I have made the mistake before of seeing someone with a long baseball resume and assuming that was their one and only sport. What about you, Rick? When did you first start getting into playing sports? Did you play anything other than baseball? And who was that role model or that influence that motivated you to want to start playing sports to begin with?
Well, great question, because I originally started playing golf. My father was a high-level golfer and was eventually our high school golf coach. But at the time, he was, you know, like club champion of our local country club. And
wow.
So I had... was introduced to the game of golf at a very, very young age, so 3-4 years old.
Wow.
And I started playing golf first, and then one of our neighbors came over to the house, and they needed one more player to form a team. And I'll never forget it. My mom was sitting at the kitchen table. I was in the backyard playing, and my mom yells to the backyard, "Rick, come in here. You know, Coach Houghton is here." And I came up front, and he's like, "You know, Rick, would you like to play?" And I said, "I can't play." And my mom looked at me and she goes, "Well, you never know." And so I said, "Okay." So I ended up started playing baseball. I was at the time 6. So I did, you know, the Little League baseball thing. I was an avid surfer. We lived about 45 miles from the coast of Florida, and I would go. So I loved to surf. And then I did gymnastics. I did the rings in gymnastics.
Wow!
So I was kind of a little bit of a gymnast for a little while, and I also did basketball. I played some basketball through middle school. So I love sports. I love the team aspect, and I love competing. And so you know, but that was instilled in me from my father and my mother. My mother, one day she surprised us. We were out in the yard. My younger brother, David, and I were out in the yard, and she was yelling at us to come inside for dinner. And we just, you know, one more. And my mom said, "One more, give me the ball." And she goes, "I'm going to show you." And so she punted the football further than we could punt it. And we were like, "Okay, it's dinner time."
But folks, listen how many times Rick has referred to his dad, and yes, you just heard him say his mom too. And this bears repeating. I know I say this on a lot of episodes, but that's how impressionable a youngster is, and that's the opportunity that a father has. That Rick said he was only 3 years old and was already thinking about golf because his father was playing the sport so successfully. And so understand that even at the age of three, they're already looking up to you. And those are times when things can go really good or really bad. And in Rick's case, obviously he took to golf, and then you just heard the list of sports that he took to. So recognize, we hear in the Bible, we hear in church a lot about men who are being called to be a father and the opportunities that come with that role. So don't take that lightly. Rick, you learned about adversity very early on at a time when a lot of student athletes are thinking about going on to a pro career. I'm referring to your injury when you were a member of the Florida Gators baseball team. How did you handle that? What role did or didn't your Catholic faith play in how you handled it? And what lesson did you maybe take away from that experience that could help somebody else?
Yeah, you know, that was, you know, it was, for me, the injury was life-changing. Looking back, it was life-changing. I had two major league organizations had sent information for me to fill out. I was potentially going to get a chance to play some professional baseball. My ankle injury came out of nowhere, and I had to have season-ending surgery. And when I came back after surgery to play out my senior year, I didn't move the same. I didn't run the same. But I finished out for the Gators. We went to the College World Series. I got to play in the College World Series. We finished third in the country. And I just knew at that point that for a little guy, you know, I didn't run the same. I wasn't moving the same. And I got the opportunity to stay on staff at the University of Florida and start my coaching career and finish my degree. So I felt like that was a better decision for me because my ankle was just limiting me. So I took it in stride. You know, I definitely, my faith was a big component in that, because when you're sitting in the silence of your own head, thinking about what your future looks like, you know, what just happened, I just said, you know, Lord, everything always happens for a reason, and it's always turned out for the best. Even some of the hardest situations that I was put through, I always look back and go, I'm a better person for it. I'm in a better situation for it. And so that's how my faith got me through the injury, is I just said, okay, Lord, maybe I was meant to be a coach, not a player. And so that was my next opportunity, was, you know, being the volunteer assistant at the University of Florida. And I had an adjustment period. There was an adjustment period, because as a player, you worry about yourself. You worry about getting yourself ready to give your best on a baseball field to help the team win games. And as a coach, the transition is, it's not about you anymore. It's about everybody else. And so that first year, it was a hard year, because I was transitioning to learn what coaching was about. And so after the first year, I tried to quit. You know, like I told Coach Lopez, I said, Coach, I don't think this is for me. And he looked at me like I was crazy. And he goes, you don't know how good you are. He's like, I won't take no for an answer. You have to come back for a second year, because you're really good. You just don't know it.
Wow.
And those are very powerful words. And so I took them to heart. And the second year I went back, and my whole trajectory and lens into coaching and love for coaching just, you know, manifested. And I can remember going to Sunday church in Gainesville, Florida, at the University of Florida. And I would pray, you know, like, Lord, you know, I have my own prayer in my head that I say daily, you know, and Lord, keep me rich in you and humble, and help me curb my tongue. Help me see what I need to see, say what I need to say, and coach the way I need to coach for your honor and glory. That's my prayer to myself. And I started that year, because I didn't know that what I did was any good at coaching. So I prayed to be a good coach. And lo and behold, you know, things just kind of manifested, and changed my life.
Wow. Wow. What great testimony. What great testimony. And that's kind of one of those cases of the common expression that people say, if you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. So you thought at the end of year one, no, I'm not going to keep coaching here at UF anymore. And that's not what was in store for you. And so thanks be to God that your coach spoke up in the way that he did. And folks, I also want you to recognize what Rick didn't say, which is that he had these offers from two Major League Baseball teams, and he could have lied. He could have been dishonest, and he could have told them, I'm fine, I feel great, and inside his head tell himself, no one's going to know, I can cover it up, I can get away with it, I can mask the ankle injury. And to his credit, he didn't say it, but you can hear the spirit of his decision-making, that he followed his Christian heart and his values pointed him towards saying, this is an opportunity to go into coaching and finish out my degree. So, Rick, great testimony, great testimony.
Thank you. Yeah, it was, I owe a lot to my parents and Coach Lopez for pointing some strengths in me out that I couldn't see. So, and the good Lord.
Major League Baseball, just like any other pro league, is a results-oriented business. When you're in a position like the ones that you have held, meaning a hitting coach, your task is to make sure that the offense is producing consistently. It's not unlike in the NFL, how in the past few weeks we've seen the offensive coordinator get fired by teams like Buffalo, Las Vegas, Pittsburgh. Rick, walk us through that, because as much as you might say, I'm grateful to have my faith to lean on when the heat gets turned up on me, when the team isn't producing, that doesn't cut it when you have a manager and a GM to answer to. So help me help the audience see how that process is navigated, because even if the manager or GM is a devout Christian, you can't just say, I know we're not hitting well, but I'm giving it to God.
Right. It's tough because, at the end of the day, you hit the nail on the head. It's about production and it's about wins and losses at the major league level. And what I always prided myself on, and I still do to this day, is that I make sure that I am completely 100% prepared with a plan, with an ability to communicate my thoughts, where I think we should go, what we should be doing. I had to learn to stand on my feet to be convicted in those messages. And, sometimes things go your way and sometimes they don't. And all I could hang my hat out at the end of the day is, am I the same person on day one that I was on the last day?
Mm.
Because for me, that's the most valuable asset that I could bring to the table. It's like, if I have a plan and I show up ready to execute that plan and I've done my homework and put everything out there, then I know the good Lord's going to, whatever happens is best for me. And, I've been fired. I've been fired twice from the major leagues. And, at the end of the day, I am very proud of the job that I did. I know the messaging that the players got. I know how I put everyone first. I made sure that I was, ultra prepared. And, they have a decision to make. The people above the hitting coach level have decisions to make as to, the people that are underneath them. And if they feel like you're not the right fit moving forward, then ultimately they're going to make that decision. And, but over the years, I look back, I just finished, I think it's 27 years of coaching, and I'm continuing to coach in what I do now. I hang my hat on being prepared and giving a very clear message as to how I feel, the trajectory of your career should go and what that looks like on a daily basis from a work ethic standpoint and an information standpoint. And it's always led me to greener pastures. And so for that, I've been blessed. The good Lord has blessed me.
Yeah, I was going to say that level of preparation has to mean a lot. It has to go a long way with, as you mentioned, nowadays you're working individually with ball players instead of for one major league team. So for them to come and put their faith and trust in you, a large part of it is because they do see the level of preparation that you go to and that there is a plan. And it's not, I'm hanging my hat on my credentials that I've worked with the Pirates and I've worked with the Nationals. I believe that y'all went to the World Series when you were working with Washington. So it's great to be able to say those things, but at the end of the day, these players are coming to you nowadays in 2023 wanting your one-on-one expertise because they see that you do have a plan for them.
That's right. You know, and to your point, Bruce, is the relationships that I established while I was working for the major league teams. These players have called me privately to say, I loved what you did for me. I loved how you talked to me. I loved how you communicated with me. I want to hire you to keep talking to me. And so really what my role is now, I feel like there's two things that I provide for players now. And that is, I'm a bridge between two entities. So like the team has their thoughts and ideas towards what they want this player to do. And I know the player intimately well, and I kind of create a bridge to make them understand how to get there, you know, how they should navigate moving in that direction. And, you know, their career is at stake. You know, they have to come home and answer to their families about, you know, decisions they make and money that they may or may not be able to make. So I try to really become a bridge to those ideas and thoughts and how to grow the player. And then the other one is a filter. You know, there's so much information out there that these players are getting bombarded with, and it's become a huge problem and an issue in most cases, is because it's just a data dump. They just dumped all the data on the players and go, okay, sink or swim, figure it out. So being the player information coach that I was for the Angels, the last time the Angels went to the playoffs, I was the player information coach. I was the person that was filtering all the information that would get to the player level. And that was my role. And I took great pride in that role. And so I learned valuable lessons then as to, you know, sometimes, you know, players need to step on the field with free minds. They need to be able to focus in ways that allow them to bring their athletic talent to those very critical moments. And if it's clouded with all this, just a data dump on their mind, you know, how can I help the players navigate through that? And so that's what I do now in my business. And I work with major leaguers, minor leaguers. I've got college players. I even, when I have extra time, I work with our local amateur levels, because there's things in the hitting space that kids are being, you know, inundated with on social media that sometimes doesn't apply for where they are. And so, and then in the process with that, when you get to know me, you get a sense of my faith as well. You get a sense of who I am as a person and what I value. And you know, a lot of times the conversations in the cage do have a faith-based message behind it, because there has to be a level of trust. There has to be a thought process in your mind that someone else is watching after me, you know? Wow. And so those concepts are definitely intertwined in some of those talks.
I love it. I love it. And folks, there are some big names that Rick was able to work with. I mean, figure it out for yourself. He was with the Nationals, and like I said, it was at the time when they were going to the World Series. So there's some big, probably the biggest on earth, the biggest name in Catholicism, two of them that Rick has been around. And I'm going to tell you who those are in a minute. He's got some stories to tell on the Catholic side. But first, I mentioned it on last week's episode, and then I posted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram the day after that episode was released, that last Tuesday, November 27th, was Giving Tuesday. I'm disappointed to tell you that I don't have any names to pass along, no one to publicly thank for supporting my ministry with a financial gift that they made that day, or any other day since then, for that matter. I get it, though. There were lots and lots of appeals made that day, and you can't give to everybody. I don't remember if I reported on a recent episode about a recent investment I made in trying to get more ears on one of the more recent episodes of Catholic Sports Radio. It's a way of bigger picture trying to grow the listening audience. The point is, I spent $100 with a service that will boost a podcast episode for you. They guarantee you something like at least 113 downloads. Plus, I spent another $25 on a Facebook ad as well. The thinking here being that if someone comes and hears one episode, they're going to like the show enough to stick around. That $125, though, has to come out of my own pocket since I don't get any income from doing this show, nor do I have any sponsors. And so it's because of trying to find a way to cover expenses like that myself that I bring up something like Giving Tuesday. And it's why I encourage you to be prayerful about who you do decide to include as part of your tithing. My hope is that this show is helping you in your faith life, and certainly that you enjoy Catholic Sports Radio and find value in the work that I'm doing through this ministry, just a couple months shy of what will be 5 years. I would ask you to kindly consider supporting me in my work by way of the blue Donate to CSR button on the homepage of CatholicSportsRadio.net. That is fast, that is easy, and that is secure. And you simply type in whatever amount you're comfortable giving, meaning that there's not a list of predetermined amounts to have to choose from. For those that are a little hesitant about putting credit card information online, you can instead contact me for information on sending a check through the mail, get in touch via social media, or email me through bruce@catholicsportsradio.net, and I will write you back with the relevant details. I'm grateful for the guests and the listeners that have contributed in the past, and I appreciate your considering Catholic Sports Radio as part of your tithing as I continue working to move more people closer to Christ. Rick, back in the intro, I said that you've been working in baseball for parts of 4 decades because we are in the third decade of the 21st century and you had started coaching with the Florida Gators in the late 90s. But about 10 years before that, in the late 80s, you attended a mass said by a pope. Explain the circumstances of how you were able to experience that. And I think it was 1987.
Yes. So we went on a retreat with our Sunday school class. We decided that we wanted to raise money and go on a little retreat. So we hired a bus, and all of us at the Sunday school went to Miami to see Pope John Paul. And so we made the trek down to Miami from the Orlando area, ended up spending the night on the bus. We had a great time. You know, when I see the word holy that day, and I don't know why, but when I think of holy, I always think of seeing the Pope riding through the crowd. We were part of the crowd in that bubble motorcade, and it was fascinating, truly, truly moving. And but like I said, every time I see or read or hear the word holy, I think of that moment in time, and it was super special for me.
Where did he say the Mass? Was it in the, I'm guessing, maybe the Miami Dolphins Stadium?
We weren't in the stadium, but we were right in that Tamiami area. I can't remember the exact venue, but there were hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, it was the biggest event I had ever been to in my life to that point.
Wow.
It was incredible just how many people were there to partake in what Pope John Paul was, you know, there to do.
Back on September 25th of this year, on episode 243, my guest was Ray McKenna from Catholic Athletes for Christ. Rick, you actually have worked with Ray to help make sure that ball players have not had to go without on Sundays. Explain to the audience what I'm referring to.
Yes, so Ray McKenna is based out of that Washington, D.C. area, and when I was with the Nationals as their hitting coach, he approached me because he was trying to get Catholic Mass up and running in baseball stadiums. And so I met with the Nationals, and you know, the GM, Mike Rizzo, is also a practicing Catholic. And I asked him if we could use the prayer room inside the locker room for Catholic Mass on Sunday mornings. And he gave me the green light. And so we started bringing in one of the local priests to do Catholic Mass inside the locker room so guys wouldn't have to miss, because Sunday day games are tough to go to Mass because As a coach, you have to be at the ballpark hours before the game, many, many hours, doing work, getting ready. And so we started doing Catholic Mass out of the prayer room in the Nationals locker room. And it grew so much, we outgrew that room.
Wow.
And then as I made my way around Major League stadiums, and of course, Ray McKenna was, you know, obviously spearheading the entire operation, but we would connect with teams and see if we could do masses at all the ballparks. So I was helping him navigate how to accomplish that and connect people, and we just kept growing it. So we would be on the road. Let's say we were on the road playing the Mets, and the Mets would have their mass inside Citi Field, and we would be, you know, let's say San Diego, and the Padres would have their mass inside their stadium. So it turned out to be so wonderful. And, you know, I could tell you stories about sitting at Wrigley Field in the stands at 9 a.m. on a beautiful day, and you have the priest giving mass, and I'm overlooking Wrigley Field while he's giving mass. Or
wow.
I could tell you the story about being at Dodger Stadium and Vin Scully reading the first reading and second readings to us as a congregation inside Dodger Stadium. I mean, you talk about super special. I mean, Vin Scully, to hear his voice and to he was such a loving man and so kind. And I mean, it was, I think of those days, and it's just, it was magical. And so Ray McKenna was a true blessing in my life, because it allowed me to continue my weekly attending of mass and not let the rigors of a Major League Baseball season take that away from me.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. That's wonderful. That's wonderful. You are an advocate for a number of charities, several of which you have a personal connection to because of something that you did for your brother, Ken. Share about all of that, if you would.
Yeah. So, the Eckstein family, has a genetic, disorder when it comes to kidney disease. So, as it pertains particularly to me, one day I was, I'm coaching with the Nationals, and I wake up and I'm literally crying. And my wife is, you know, saying like, what's the matter? What's going on? And I said, I don't know, but the good Lord just told me I'm going to donate to my brother. And she's like, what are you talking about? Like, and I was like, I don't know. All I know is I got to call my sister, Christine, and I've got to find out what I need to do, because I'm going to be donating my kidney to my brother. She's like, when did you talk to your brother last? And I was like, it's been a couple months. You know, the season, the rigors of the season, it's been, you know, it was very hard on me. And so I called my sister and asked her, and she started crying on the phone, and she's like, how did you know? And I was like, I don't know. I had a dream.
Wow.
And I have to donate my kidney to Ken.
Wow.
And so lo and behold, the Nationals were great. I went to the ballpark that day. They gave me a blood test at the ballpark. Blood-wise, I was a perfect match to my brother Ken. And so we immediately contacted the doctors. My sister, because of our family history, my mom donated to my sister Susan in 1988, I believe it was. And then Christine and Ken, 2 years later, got cadaver donors. My father received a kidney from my brother's wife, Lori Vaughn, and I donated to Ken. So there's been a long history. So we still have my nieces and nephews have you know, some conditions that we're still dealing with, one of which had a transplant. So there's that long history allowed my sister to know exactly who to call. I mean, if anybody's listening and you need an advocate in the kidney space, my sister Christine is probably the best in the world. But nor here nor there, she got me in contact with who I needed to talk with, and we set it up. And on December 8th, 2010, I donated my kidney to my older brother, Ken.
Wow. Oh, that's powerful. That's powerful. And the Lord's healing hand has definitely been on your family, that's for sure.
There's no doubt about it, you know, and I think my mom, her message to us as kids, you know, is, you know, probably why I'm influenced the way I am and the way I think is, you know, Lord, if this is what you have us dealing with, we'll deal with it. Let's go. And there was never any type of like feel sorry for me or back down. That our family message was pick your bootstraps up, tighten down your belt, let's go to work, let's go. And so my brothers and sisters dealt with that while they were trying to go to college. And so my mother wouldn't let them not finish going to college. So they did dialysis while attending college courses and getting their degrees. My sister Susan was in high school when she was dealing with it, and she was, you know, stayed on track and graduated from high school and went on to college and, you know, got her college degree. And so it was just another speed bump in the road, if you will. And it was, my mother is very special for that.
Yeah. And so it's fitting then, folks, did you catch it? Rick said December 8th was the day that this took place in him and his brother's life. And of course, we all know as Catholics that December 8th is the day that we celebrate the Immaculate Conception. And so you just heard him make reference to his mother, his earthly mother, and how special she is. And of course, we have Mary, our mother in heaven, that watches over us daily, and we celebrate her not only December 8th, but throughout the year. Folks, if you are a doubting Thomas and you still don't see the depths of Rick's devotion to his Catholic faith, how about another pope whose mass he attended and going to mass not only all over the U.S., but in 10 other countries, no doubt because of baseball? Rick, I want to point out that you had a choice. So clearly you were making the conscious decision, I've got to find a church in all those U.S. cities and all those countries. Mass from another pope is a no-brainer, but all those others, it would be easy to just stay at the hotel and say, you know, baseball, I can't go.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, you know, in some of the countries, it's very challenging. But that's been part of the faith, you know, you do what it takes. And I was in Cuba, and we were there for an Olympic qualifier. And I remember I was trying to talk to the locals about where's the local church. It was an hour and a half walk away. Mm. And I said, that's fine. No, that's fine. And I said, what time does it start? And they said, oh, about 10 o'clock. And, you know, it was broken English. And so, okay. So they drew a map on a piece of paper. And so this is 2006. Mm. And I just remember I told Paul Seiler, who was, you know, director of Team USA, CEO. And I was like, Paul, I got it. I'm going to do this. Mass starts at 10. I'll be back. I'll be able to, you know, do everything. He goes, oh, don't worry about it. You're great. You're good, Rick. And so I went, and I'm sitting at this church. It's about 9:30 in the morning because I didn't want to be late, and that was a long walk. And so 10 o'clock hits, nobody shows up. 10:30 hits, nobody shows Uh-oh. Up. 11 o'clock hits, nobody's there. Uh-oh. So I start talking to people, and they're like, yeah, we said around 10 o'clock. It should happen any minute.
Oh,
so
gosh.
Mass actually started closer than this. But, you know, nor here. It was just, I mean, I'm sitting here in my office just smiling because, you know, just remembering all the different churches, the different people, you know, but it's the same faith. You know, you see what the good Lord does to people and it lights them up. And it was, you know, just wonderful. So. So all the different countries and all their traditions and, you know, it culminated to, like you said, I went and saw Pope Benedict. I took my mom to Rome, Italy, and on a baseball convention, and we made Rome a part of our visit and stop, and we did mass with him, and just phenomenal, fantastic.
Fantastic.
One of the best trips I've had going with my mother.
Oh, I'm sure. And because you mentioned your wife before when you said, I've got to donate to my brother, let's close by having you share with us about your wife, where and when the two of you got married, as well as the family that the two of you have made.
Yeah, so my wife Caroline, we met in D.C. She was working on Capitol Hill with the NCTA, which is the National Cable and Telecommunications Association at the time. And we started dating and got married. We got married in Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Georgetown, right there in Washington, D.C. And we started our family. So we had Isabel in 2013, and we had Grace in 2015. And so we have an 8 and 10-year-old, and she is truly the workhorse of the family. I mean, she is the backbone of our operation here at the Eckstein House. She's, just obviously with working in baseball, it takes you away a lot. And she makes sure that everything happens for the girls. And now that I'm home, I get to partake. And even on our drive home this morning, I looked at my wife and I was like, you know, because it's been 2 years. I've been home 2 years doing my consulting business. And I said, you know what? I think this has been fantastic. The good Lord wanted me home. Mm. He wanted me home here with the girls. And so that's been a huge blessing. And then, so now my wife has decided that she wants to use some of her expertise and her background. And so she aligned with Tier 4 Advisors, which is an IT procurement company. So she's dabbling in that, and it's been phenomenal for her, so she can use her expertise and all of that goes with using her skill set. So I'm very proud of her. And so that's kind of our world.
Spoken like a true proud husband. I love it. And folks, did you hear the Lord's hand again? You know, we talked earlier in the show, Rick was describing his career at UF and how he thought at the end of his first year of coaching, no, I'm not meant to do coaching anymore. And that's clearly what he was called to all the years that he's done it. And in a minute, we're going to close with a prayer for coaches. But same thing here. Clearly, the Lord called him to say, you need to be at home with your family. And so in leaving his last job, it's obviously bittersweet, but the reward at the end of it is now I can be with my family. And sure, he has his business now that he's operating. But at the same time, it allows him to be right there with his wife and with their daughters. Rick, so wonderful to have you on the show. Thank you for making time to be on Catholic Sports Radio, and God bless you and your family.
Thank you, Bruce. Thank you for having me. And I really enjoy what you're doing tying the sports world and the Catholic world. And any way I can help in the future or any awareness that we could bring to it, please let me know. And I'd love to help.
I sure appreciate it. And folks, as I said, let's close as a recognition of all the years that Rick has spent in coaching with a prayer for coaches. And we'll do it together, of course, in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. From 1 Corinthians 15, but thanks be to God who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Lord, we all want to win. Above the desire to win, teach us to remember our victories toward godly living as we learn to obey you and your word daily. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Thanks so much for listening. This is Catholic Sports Radio. Find more at catholicsportsradio.net, as well as on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. It is at Cath Sports Radio on all those, C-A-T-H, at Cath Sports Radio. I'm Bruce Wozniak, and remember, it's not whether you win or lose, it's that it's Jesus that you always choose.